This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Americans will not have to wait long to see where President Trump's pick for the Supreme Court stands on religious liberty. Justice Neil Gorsuch was among the nine justices hearing a religious discrimination case involving Trinity Lutheran Church and the state of Missouri today. David Kortman, senior counsel with ADF, was a part of the oral arguments earlier today at the Supreme Court, and he joins us in just a moment. And despite raising over $8 million, agitators on the left came up short in their effort to capture Georgia's 6th congressional district seat yesterday, which had been vacated by Congressman Tom Price, who is now Secretary of Health and Human Services. Former Deputy White House Political Director Scott Jennings is here to break down yesterday's race in Georgia, the messages sent, and where the race goes from here. Also, while it was stalled for a short while, the Texas privacy bill is moving forward with the introduction of a House version that will protect the privacy of Texans in public showers, locker rooms, and restrooms in the Lone Star State. Jonathan Sines, president of Texas Values, is here a little later with an update. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's programs and the topics we're covering. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, coming up May the 24th through the 26th, our annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors briefing. There's still room, not a whole lot, but there's still room, Pastor, for you. Find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right. Justice Neil Gorsuch, his first week on the Supreme Court, features a high-profile religious liberty case. The justices heard oral arguments concerning a Missouri church's suit that is challenging its exclusion from a state program that provides access to recycled rubber from tires for playgrounds for children. They were excluded because they were a church. Joining us now is David Kortman, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom and lead counsel for Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Missouri. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, good to be on with you.
David, there appears to be a bully on the playground, but this time it looks like it's the state.
No, I think that's right. It's interesting in this case when they come up with a pretty good program to get the tires out of the landfills and other places and recycle them and put them to a good use, that the church qualifies for the program. And then once the state looks at the application, realize a religious organization is operating that preschool, it basically says, well, now we're going to reject you from the program solely on that basis.
Yeah, back when I was in the legislature, and we were a part of these recycling programs for tires. It's a very costly process of stripping the wire out of the tires. And so on its own, it's hard to get this stuff out there. And that's why the state has these programs to help supplement the cost to put them out there. They're really good for playgrounds and such, but they're costly. And so this was a program in which applicants filled out an application, put forth a proposal. The state was going to help so many of them. They ranked toward the top of the list in terms of their application and their proposal. But yet, simply because they were a church, they were rejected. Is that correct?
It is, and it's quite incredible, because if you think about any type of government benefit program, especially a safety program, you would think they would want all citizens to be equally safe. But just because some citizens, and here kids, may choose to play on a playground that happens to be operated by a school, both kids from the community and the school itself, because it's open, then they say, well, we're not as worried much about those kids, when they play. And I think it doesn't make any sense at a legal level or even a logical level.
Right. And David, so the folks are clear, as you pointed out, this was not just a playground at a church for, the kids to use during Sunday school. This was a preschool program that was open to any kid who wanted to come in. The parents wanted to put them in that preschool, they could be there. So it affected the safety and well-being of children beyond just the walls of that four walls of that church.
Well, that's right. And in fact, over 95% of the kids who attend the school don't attend the church. And they open up the playground after hours and weekends to everyone who lives in the community. And so it's not only the kids that don't attend the church and go to the school, but it's kids from everywhere in that area. They're free to come and use it as they wish.
So, David, your sense today, based on the questions asked by the justices, did they seem sympathetic with your client?
They really did, and it was really, I think, a pleasant outcome today with just the tenor of the argument, because it was one of those things people were predicting, you know, to be divided upon ideological lines with the court, and we never thought that way, because this seems to be a principle that all of the justices would care about, and that is, can you take a religious person or a religious organization and then say, when you approach the government for any type of a neutral benefit, that you could be rejected solely on the basis of who you are, of your religious status? If you choose some faith, whatever it happens to be, then you could be eliminated from any other government program that you would otherwise qualify for. An argument was that's discrimination first and foremost, and it's not permissible under the Constitution.
So, David Cordman, if you follow that logic that the state puts forth, could the government at some point not even deny churches access to other non-religious public benefits, such as, you know, fire service, water treatment? I mean, where would they draw the line, and how do they draw the line?
And that's exactly the point. There is no line, and especially because the Missouri Constitution, which is what they look toward for this discrimination, says any direct or indirect aid. So it's so broad, it encompasses any type of benefit. We talked about, for example, if a state has a program where they reimburse schools for flu shots, for example, you know, would be able to say, we're going to reimburse students that go to any school, public or private, except for the kids that attend the religious school. And that's the type of program we're talking about here, and it just doesn't make any sense to say that we're going to eliminate any of the students on these type of safety programs simply because of who they are.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, discussing with David Cordman, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, the case that was presented to the Supreme Court today, oral arguments, in a case involving Trinity Lutheran Church in Missouri. Their school, their preschool playground, wanted to actually applied for a government program that helped secure these rubberized surfaces for the playgrounds made from recycled tires, and they were rejected simply because they were a school, a church school. David, is it your sense that the court will come back with a very narrow ruling in this case that would affect no one beyond your client, or could we have a broader decision here that could affect other cases?
I think either way, it will affect other cases and other people and other places. And the reason for that is the principle that we were arguing here is that it's impermissible for the government to target people of faith for discrimination in these myriad types of government benefit programs. So even if the opinion comes out and says, in this particular situation, it was impermissible to do this type of discrimination and to single out religious organizations just because of their religious status, I think it's still going to carry a much broader precedent, just because it's in that same situation that occurs anywhere, you know, this type of opinion will apply.
David, what other religious liberty cases do we see in the pipeline making their way up to the nation's highest court?
Well, we have several of what we would call the rights of conscience cases. So these are the cases that you hear about across the country, the baker, the florist, the photographer, the fire chief. All of these people that are having their careers and jobs threatened just because of the view they take on marriage between a man and a woman, for example, or even being forced to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony if they decline. And so that's a new round of cases that are being briefed and are coming up to the Supreme Court. And my guess is that sometime soon they're going to be taking one of those and weighing in on those.
You know, David, I don't know if it's just my perception. I think not. I think it's actually fact. But ADF seems to have a lot of cases that make their way to the Supreme Court. Any sense of the numbers of how many cases you guys have had before the nation's highest court?
We have. I mean, it's been in the last 6 or 7 years, we've had, I believe, 6 or 7 cases that we've litigated ourselves and brought all the way up. Over the past, I think, 15 to 20 years, we've been involved in one way or another. In about 50 cases at the Supreme Court. But we do litigate. We've got a great team all around the country and now internationally that litigates these cases. And a lot of them, as you mentioned, are making their way up to the court because we can see all the things that are happening around the country, how difficult it is when you are serious about your faith and you want to live out your faith there's going to be some consequence to that, whether someone requires you to adopt a message you disapprove of or participate in an event that you disapprove of. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of those.
And that's pretty significant. And we've got a couple of minutes left. If you could explain to our listeners, you know, cases just don't land before the Supreme Court. I mean, when you see, first off, you got to see the issue, and it's got to be a constitutional issue. But it's not just that. You have to approach it and argue it even at the district court level, the appellate court level, to really pave the way for the Supreme Court to take the case. So what all goes into that process?
You're absolutely right. The court takes less than 1% of the cases that ask for it to be heard there. So it's a very, very small number. And we're fortunate to have a lot of cases in the pipeline, both at the district court level and the Court of Appeals. But you have to keep in mind what is the court looking at, what type of precedent out there. Is there what's called a conflict in the circuits, which means are there different areas of the country that are ruling on the same issue differently? Because one of the jobs of the Supreme Court is national uniformity in the law under federal law. So if you have different places ruling on the same issue differently, that's more likely to go up. And we can see how the culture is going. And so a lot of these issues are producing clashes between different types of rights, such as constitutional rights to free speech or free exercise of religion. So there's a lot to go into these cases. They take years just to get up there. And then obviously for the court just to take one of those is fantastic, never mind the number that ADF has had.
Well, you guys are doing great work. We appreciate the partnership with Alliance Defending Freedom and appreciate the work you did on the case today. And we're going to be watching very closely as the court moves toward issuing a ruling later this year or early this summer.
All right. Thanks, Tony. We appreciate everything you'll do.
All right. David Kortman, senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, the first religious liberty case for the newest justice on the court, Donald Trump's pick, Neil Gorsuch, who heard his first religious liberty case today. This one, quite frankly, I don't think is difficult. It's not hard. And so I think you will probably see 7-2, maybe 8-1, possibly even 9-0. It's possible. Not likely, but possible, because you had another case a few years back, which I should have asked David about. It slips my mind, but I think it was a Lutheran church as well, and it had to do with hiring. And this was the Obama administration basically putting in place policies that restricted telling the churches who they could hire, and the Supreme went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they slam dunked it 9-0. I mean, they told the administration, you are out of line. So we'll see what happens with this case. All right, still to come. Yesterday, special election in Georgia, the 6th Congressional District. Dr. Tom Price had held the seat, but he was tapped by the president to lead Health and Human Services. And so there was a runoff that attracted attention from across the country. Democrats, it's a Republican district. It's been in a Republican hand since, I think, the late 70s, and the Democrat candidate raised over $8 million. Of course, he was going up against 11 Republican candidates, and he fell short of gaining the 50% needed to win. We're going to take a look at that case. They were hoping to send a message. Did they send it? Well, we'll find out next when we return here on Washington Watch. We'll be talking with veteran political analyst Scott Jennings here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
You're listening to A Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Does purity, cleanness of heart, mind, and soul matter? Yes, it does matter. And further, it will always matter because it matters to God. God shows that repeatedly in the Bible. Think of King David on top of that roof, looking, lusting, and committing adultery with Bathsheba. You know the rest. His falling to temptation led to other heinous sins, and his life was never the same as his treachery opened the floodgates to other sin, and his family and his kingdom paid a great price for David's uncleanness. Whether young or old, there's a great price that's paid when one lusts over pornography in whatever form or situation. Seek first the kingdom of God and place no evil thing before your eyes. Psalm 101:3a. This is a Decency Minute. Find out more by visiting us on the web at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
To Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Hey, if you're not receiving our daily update, you can do so by going to TonyPerkins.com, and you can get all the information of what's happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom Monday through Friday. Also, alerts to let you know what's happening and how you can take actions to make a difference. And I'm encouraged to say that while many thought that social conservatives would back away and kind of go back to business as usual after the election, not so. You're staying very involved, and you need to. This is a rare opportunity we have. And we can see how the left is moving very quickly to try to stop the progress that's being made, to turn back the clock to the liberal, destructive Obama days. And so every time there's one of these special elections, because the president tapped somebody to fill a cabinet post, they rush from across the country, funnel all of their resources in to try to capture a seat and say, well, we're sending a message. Well, yesterday there was a race in which a lone Democratic candidate faced off, was in a face-off with about 11 Republicans. He failed to get to 50%. It's a jungle primary like we have in Louisiana. There's a Georgia, a jungle primary. And it fell short of the 50%. So there will be a runoff between him, John Ossoff, and Karen Handel in June for the 6th Congressional District. And again, that was a seat vacated by Dr. Tom Price, who was tapped to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Joining us now to talk more about this race, kind of break it down, what we might see going from here, and whether or not there were messages sent yesterday, former Special Assistant to President George W. Bush and Deputy White House Political Director, now co-founder and partner of Run Switch PR, Scott Jennings. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate being on today.
Well, Scott, so what's your take on yesterday's race there in the 6th District of Georgia?
Well, you know, I sort of thought a lot about the baseball legend Frank Robinson today. He once said that close doesn't count in baseball. It only counts in hand grenades and horseshoes. And for Democrats, they got close, but that doesn't really count in politics. It's the same in Kansas a few weeks ago. A lot of talk about the possibility of upsetting in Kansas and get close, but again, no win. And I think the Democratic Party is, as you pointed out, going from special election to special election, attempting to send a message, as they say, but they keep failing to do that. And they come out of these elections and they claim moral victories about, you know, well, they got close, or, you know, we did better than expected. But, you know, I did a statistical analysis of all the members of Congress, and, you know, not one of them won their seat through a moral victory. They won their seat through actual victories where they defeated some opponent in a final election. And so the Democratic Party, I think, is at a real crossroads right now, because they're trying to keep their donor base and their activist base energized, but they can't seem to get over the hump in these specials.
Well, Scott, can you buy a moral victory? I mean, almost $10 million, that's a lot to buy for a moral victory. In fact, I'm paying for a moral victory. I'm kind of wondering, did that set a record in that district?
I'm certain that it set a record in that district. I doubt it set a record for special elections nationally because, you know, as you pointed out, a lot of these things take on a life of their own when it's the only thing going on. And if you look at the money that was spent in this particular race for the Democrats, virtually none of it came from inside the district. I mean, you had Hollywood celebrities pouring in money. You know, there's a lot of Democratic rage money out there, frankly, on the field.
Right.
In a lot of political situations, they're full of rage. They're embarrassed about what happened last November when Republicans won victories up and down the ballot. And so they're looking for a place to put money, and they keep trying to believe in these candidates who end up coming up short. And they're going to do it again. I'm certain that the Democrats will be able to raise a considerable sum as this runoff now goes into into the stretch here for a June final date. So I think we're going to continue to see liberal activists and liberal elites and Hollywood types pour money into these things in an attempt to buy, you know, some kind of enthusiasm for really a party that's got no message right now.
When you look at what they are trying to do, it's being facilitated, though, by the media. I mean, the media would be all too quick to say, yeah, look, everybody's rejecting the Trump agenda. A Democrat won a seat that's been held by Republicans for 30 years. But when they lose, the reverse of that is not talked about.
I think you're exactly right about that. Yeah, the press is ready and anxious on the headline. Voters begin to repudiate Trump, or voters turn against the Republican Party. They haven't been able to write that yet, but what's the converse? What should they be writing? You know, Trump back candidate in Kansas wins election, Republicans get more votes than Democrats in special election, showing strength of Republican agenda. I mean, the corollary is clear, but we never see that in some of the reporting. And so I think that, you know, this is part of the narrative game that we play in politics. You know, we go through these campaign cycles and everybody's looking for a narrative. They want to build people up, and then they want to tear them down. And they want to have a narrative. Oh, here comes the comeback. Well, the Democrats were built up last fall. They got torn down on election night, and now they're desperate to try to build them back up by showing some evidence that people are flowing back to the Democratic Party. But, of course, the voters aren't cooperating, and the press doesn't know what to do with it right now. They think Donald Trump out there is not doing well vis-a-vis the voters who elected him. I disagree. I think the people who voted for Trump frankly, for the most part, out in these elections, are still winning.
Scott, 30 seconds. Your sense on this race, what happens from here? Does the Republicans hold on to this seat?
I would rate the Republicans as a slight favorite here. I only say a slight favorite because I think the Democrats will muster millions more for Ossoff from around the country. But you have to remember, this is out-of-district money coming for an out-of-district candidate that cannot even vote for himself. Really, they're trying to manufacture something. But I suspect the Republicans will hold.
Yeah. All right. Scott Jennings, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insight on this race. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Yeah, look, I mean, that just happens. The Republicans did the same thing. I mean, you know, not so much the same thing, because the districts were, the lines are such that, you know, Republicans have a hard time in some of these very liberal districts. But you have, you had people who are not in favor of Trump who would vote for a Democratic candidate. Anyway, I think the Republicans hold on to this seat. It's a pretty strong Republican district. All right. When we come back, the bill to provide privacy for Texas citizens is moving forward. It's been stalled for a while. but is moving forward now with an introduction of a bill in the House. Jonathan Sines, who is the president of FPC, joins us.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, coming right out of the chute, in the middle of the week here, we've got gold slides, but the dollar is recovering. The dollar is getting a little bit stronger as some of the metals are seen backing off from some of their recent highs. The geopolitical events, not only Syria, North Korea, Afghanistan, Iran, but even the geopolitical events here in America seem to be keeping somewhat of a floor underneath the precious metals, keeping them from falling or sliding too far down the slope. Aside from that, it looks like stocks are going to begin to recover a little bit after a few days of losses, primarily due to earnings. And I would suspect, unless something happens again from a geopolitical standpoint, I would suspect that all eyes for the rest of this week are going to be on earnings and what is happening and the rhetoric of tax reform and what that looks like. So they've got a few days here next week to come back and get a long look at first. They've got to raise the debt ceiling once again because they've done nothing to address that. They have little choice now but to raise it once again to keep the government from shutting down. So that's probably going to be the first order of business. Then they're going to look at Obamacare. Then they're going to look at tax reform. So if they can get all that done next week, it would be nothing short of a miracle. That's not likely to happen. But again, most eyes are going to be on earnings reports, particularly in the financial sector, and they seem like they are picking up and right now looking like a very good earnings season, but it's a little early yet.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. Let me remind you that the program, Washington Watch, is an outreach of the Family Research Council, which is an organization, unlike many on the left, receives no government funding. You know, most of those groups, those hate groups on the left that spew venom toward conservatives, they do so with your tax dollars. Not us. We don't spew venom to begin with, but we also don't do it with tax dollars. So if you enjoy this program, you find it helpful, keeping you informed, well, I encourage you to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and become a partner with the Family Research Council. We've got a team of people, many working on Capitol Hill and places across the nation. We've got about 80 people on our team working day in and day out to be your voice for values in our nation's capital and beyond. Again, that website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, a Texas House committee is waiting to take up a bill that would ban cities and school districts from enacting or enforcing local policies that regulate bathroom use. Now, we were down in Texas working on Senate Bill 6. They did not move that bill in the House. They have another bill, House Bill 2899, which is different. State Representative Ron Simmons is the author of that bill. It's similar but different. And joining us now to talk about it, give us an update, is Jonathan Sines, been on the program many times. He's president of Texas Values, a nonprofit group dedicated to preserving and advancing a culture of family values in the Lone Star State. Jonathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on again.
All right. What's the latest on House Bill 2899?
Well, it's going to be a long night here at the Texas Capitol. I'm sitting outside one of the committee rooms and not far from the Texas House chamber. They're debating some other bills. And so it's going to be a while until they actually start the hearing on this privacy issue. But, you know, a lot of people are encouraged that the House is moving on what appears to be their signal that this issue is very important. Because, as you said, Senate Bill 6 flew out of the Senate. A lot of support. You and your team were on the ground. Broadcast your radio show out of our office. That was a tremendous joy. But we're seeing that the House is now moving. You know, and they had an opportunity to take up Senate Bill 6, and the House leadership by Joe Strauss does not like Senate Bill 6, and so but House members wanted to move something. They are motivated by this issue. Polling suggests that people in Texas support privacy and safety in bathrooms. We've seen the attack in the press on these issues, and so we're encouraged that there's movement. The language, it talks about the issue of intimate facilities. It talks about the state being in control of these issues, and so there is a lot to be encouraged by, and so we're going to see what happens at the hearing today. There's a lot of maybe some new or different support. There's rumors that representatives from the Dallas Cowboys may be supporting this bill, House Bill 2899. And there also was a tweet yesterday by our governor, Greg Abbott, who said that he supports the principles that the House and Senate are working on privacy. And his words are that he is working to get a bill on this issue to his desk.
Yeah, that was encouraging. I saw that tweet. I've also seen the evolution, if you will, of the speaker's language. Speaker Strauss has kind of changed his tune. I remember when the bill, Senate Bill 6, was first introduced, he said that the Texas safety was not the most urgent concern of his, and basically said he wasn't going to move it. He's changed. Now we have this House version, and it is moving forward. And I think that a lot of that is because of the pressure that has been built, because you and others have put a spotlight on this. And frankly, it's been the citizens who have spoken out, and they're responding to the citizens.
Yeah, we had members from legislative office last week that were calling our office, asking us to tell their people to stop calling. The message was getting through that there was support for legislation on privacy and safety and intimate facilities like bathrooms and shower rooms and locker rooms. If people go to our website, txvalues.org, they can see we've got an updated list, 2 pages of incidents that have happened in bathrooms and locker rooms and shower rooms. As a matter of fact, there was, unfortunately, 2 public school employees that were arrested recently in a Texas school district and for inappropriate activity relating to students. And one of the activities they were involved in was placing cameras in locker rooms. And so it is just upsetting that we're seeing more of this, but there's no doubt that these issues are happening and that the state needs to find a solution. But just also notably, the NCAA listed or released a list of site locations, and many of them included Texas locations where they're going to host their championships. Not that we have a lot of faith in what the NCAA does or their sway, but it is notable that you're seeing more and more indications that this issue is moving in Texas. There's momentum on our side. And it looks like we have a very good opportunity to get something done.
Yeah, I think you're right. You got to watch. You know, call me jaded or whatever you want to call me, but I'm watching the House leadership to make sure they're not playing games over there, because I've seen how they can play those games. You just got to stay on top of to make sure that bill makes its way through.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're still a long way from the finish line. And, you know, we're going to be here every day working on this issue. We will be here overnight if that's how things go with this hearing. We've got many people here that are going to be here at the hearing with us. We're going to try to find out a way to have a Facebook Live of the hearing, because the House Chair, Byron Cook, has become very restrictive on people seeing the hearing if you're not sitting in the hearing room and broadcasting. Nonetheless, we're going to do our best to keep people engaged and educated and do the best that we can find the best product for people, because this issue is important, and you are right. We're getting momentum, and people care about it, and I think Texas people expect us to come out with the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Jonathan Sines, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, Tony, it's always a pleasure and a joy, and we look to giving you an update soon on this issue.
All right, we'll definitely be in touch. All right, folks. Don't go away. We're coming back on the other side of this break with more Washington Watch. In fact, we're going to have your phone calls on the other side of this break, so don't go away. We're coming back.
We at the American Family Association believe men should not be allowed to use women's restrooms or dressing rooms. Yet the policy of Target allows just that. Do you agree that this policy poses danger to our women and children? Then sign the Boycott Target Pledge. When you do, you're saying, until Target makes the safety of women and children a priority, I'll shop elsewhere. The good news is the boycott is making a big difference. A Target financial report indicates a dramatic drop in their sales and earnings. And a Wall Street Journal article clearly shows that Target CEO Brian Cornell regrets his company's policy announcement welcoming men to use women's restrooms and dressing rooms. We're convinced that together we can stop this insanity before more women and children become victims. Sign the pledge today and tell others about the boycott. Go to afa.net/target. That's afa.net/target.
Is God calling you to pursue theological graduate education? What's keeping you from taking the first step? Is it time? What if you could choose from flexible class options? Is it money? What if competitively priced seminary offered academic scholarships? Do you think you're alone? What if your classmates were just like you, balancing careers and families with seminary? Hello, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Take the first step. Visit wbs.edu.
1952.
Congress passed a bill today stating that the president is to set aside a day each year as a national day of prayer. Senator Frank Carlson of
1988.
President Reagan has just signed a bill designating the first Thursday in May as the national day of prayer. Those present at the signing...
The American Family Association encourages you to pray with your neighbors at your city hall Thursday, May 4th from 1220 to 1240 on this year's National Day of Prayer.
Teen pregnancy is a tough problem for everyone involved. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart today. For Jules Green, the answer seemed simple enough. She already considered herself a mother. But facing opposition on all sides, she agreed to an abortion at age 17. She attempted suicide in the immediate aftermath. And after receiving psychiatric care, Jules then spent the next 5 years working in the abortion industry. Looking back, she says she was hoping that that would make her own abortion okay. A friend had agreed to serve as a surrogate mother and wound up aborting a baby due to Down syndrome. Well, that finally opened Jules' eyes to the value of life, and it helped her repent and heal her own abortion experience and advocacy through faith in Jesus Christ. Find out more of Jules' story and resources to find healing after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, 10 days away. You know what we're 10 days away from? That's not the question. The question is this. We're 10 days away from the first 100 days, completion of the first 100 days of the Trump administration. It's April the 29th. We'll make 100 days. The president earlier this week said no administration has accomplished as much as his administration has in its first 90 days. Here's what I want to ask you today. 866-372-7234, before you dial. This is not Family Feud. Before you dial, here's the question. All right. How would you rate the Trump administration as we move toward that 100-day mark? That's a critical point. You know, every administration coming in tries to get as much as they can accomplished in the first 100 days because that really kind of sets a pace. And it is, in many ways, it shapes the entire administration. So how would you rate the Trump administration as they move toward the end of their first 100 days? 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234 to weigh in on that today. While we're doing that, while the phones are starting to light up, 866-372-7234, I want to go back to something Jonathan Sein said about the NCAA releasing its list of potential sites for their championship games. They have announced that they're going to North Carolina. You know, again, I kind of hesitate to talk about the NCAA because I just think that, first off, I don't really give a rip about the where they play their games, okay? I think, you know, the safety of women and children is far more important than watching some basketball game, okay? It's just fine, just how I feel. But, you know, after North Carolina tweaked their bill, and we've talked about that, the NCAA is back to North Carolina. Well, that is sending the agitators on the left ballistic the Human Rights Campaign that had all of these people on a string like Pinocchio, are livid that the NCAA has broken faith with them or covenant with them and is now, you know, no longer under their control. And the same thing in Texas. So, but here's what's happened, okay? And this is instructive. This is the point I want to make. The reason they're losing their grip on these weak-kneed politicians and these corporate, big corporations, the reason they're losing their grip is because the people are speaking back. They're pushing back. They're speaking out. They're pushing back against this crazy, insane, asinine agenda that the big corporations and the sporting leagues are pushing at the behest of these homosexual agitators, like the Human Rights Campaign. So, the moral of the story is push back. Don't sit there and let this crazy stuff happen that endangers women, children, and the safety of society as a whole. Okay, 866-372-7234. How do you rate the Trump administration as we're at the 90-day mark, moving toward the conclusion of the first 100 days? Let's go to Texas where Iris is on the line. Iris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, hi, Tony. Haven't talked to you in a while, but I just want to tell you that I would rate him about a B, maybe an 85%. And the reason it's not 100% is, for one thing, about the Christian rights thing. He's kind of wavered about Christians in the workplace, and he that kind of stalled there. That was one thing. And the health care fiasco, I think that he could have been firmer in standing with the Freedom Caucus.
Okay.
I thought
two very good things, Iris. Let me just say, stand by. I think you're going to see a resolution on the repeal of Obamacare. Even though Congress is on their resurrection break, Easter break, some want to call it a spring break, but they broke for Easter, the resurrection. I've been talking to members, and they're very, very close. I think we may see something next week on that. And I'm very optimistic that we're going to see the repeal of Obamacare, and the Freedom Caucus is going to be on board. The conversations have continued. Positive about that. The conversations have continued about religious liberty. In fact, I hope you've signed our petition. If not, I think it might be at TonyPerkins.com, if not FRC.org. But we're not giving up on that, Iris. We're going to see that happen. Okay, so I would, you know what, very perceptive. I would agree with you. I think that's about where we are, but I think we're going to get there, and I think we're going to see his grade go up, maybe even some extra credit. Iris, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate you calling. We're going to stay in Texas, and we're going to talk to Judy. Judy, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. Yeah, I just want to. I would rate Trump with an A+. He's only been in office for 90 days. I think I agree he's done more than any other president in his first 90 days. He's done, you know, he's held to, tried to do everything he promised that he would do, and he's working on it. I'd give Paul Ryan and the GOP an F for not working with the president. And I know, as far as, you know, him not working with the Freedom Caucus, yeah, they need to do some work on that, but I still think I would rate him an A+.
All right. Fair enough. And let me just say, the president was working with the Freedom Caucus. There was that one kind of blow up where they had kind of gotten to a point of, you know, the negotiations kind of broke down. The Freedom Caucus wanted more. The White House didn't want to give more. But they came back to the table, and they've been working. And so they're working together. It was a little bumpy, but that's the process. I mean, that's how it works, and I think the president is learning that, because this is a whole new arena. I'm just going to tell you, the political arena is much different than the business arena, because you have all of these people. You know, you got, you know, 435 members. You know, they've got they all have their constituencies that have varying issues, And you got to somehow come together and come up with a working solution. And it's difficult. It's not an easy or a pretty process. But I think we're getting there. Judy, thanks again for calling. Boy, Texas is on the line today. Let's go to Martha in Texas. Martha, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. I remember talking with you when I was in San Antonio. I don't know where you were at that time, back in the 80s. But it was a pleasure to talk to you then. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. I would rate Trump at a 98, and the 2% lacking area would be in the Obamacare arena. Yes, and I heard a comment about him, you know, was looking for it. It's going to be repealed, and I absolutely am going to be looking for that, because I think at this point Trump is very much a man of his word. That's a great character trait for him, it seems. I love the responsiveness he is showing. Straight out of the gate on any issue. He's not sitting down waiting for a whole bunch of other opinions to come across his desk to give him, the options of what to do. He just shoots from the hip, and we better do it. And I like that. Think straight out of the gate that's needed, especially for opponents out there and the North Koreans, Syrians. They just sit up like, I'm with him still.
Uh-oh. Somebody trying. It must be that party line there in Texas. Wait your turn now. Wait your turn. Martha, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening and calling in. You know, I like the fact that Trump, maybe I'll do this a little bit later, maybe later in the week or next week. I'll have the number one thing that you like about the Trump administration in the first 100 days. But let me tell you why I give him a good grade. I probably give him a B+. You know, I'd probably say B+. But what I like is the fact that he has taken it to the press. I get so tired of the politicians who pander to the press and treat them as if they, you know, they're due some kind of special treatment. I mean, calling out the fake news. I appreciate that he's putting the left on notice and saying, look, you're not going to define what's happening here. And I know a lot of people are upset with him tweeting, and you know, I know he's a little bit of he's kind of spontaneous is probably not the right word. He's he's a little unhinged. No, I wouldn't say, maybe that's too much, but somewhere in between there and his tweeting, people are a little concerned that he's a little too impulsive. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Randy. Impulsive in his tweeting. And I don't know. Some people like that. And I like the fact that he takes on the media and that he goes around the media. I think it keeps him honest, frankly. But anyway, that's for next week. We're going to continue with the overall rating of the Trump administration into the first 100 days. We're going to go to Indiana, where TJ is on the line. TJ, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. First-time caller, a little bit longer listener. I was rating Trump at kind of what you said, but maybe a little higher. I think it's the CEO that is faced with a bureaucracy that he's not been up against. I think without so much opposition that he has to fight, he would have gotten even more done in the first 90 days.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the political stuff, and I understand the give and take that goes on with even one's own party. I mean, I did that back when I was in office as well. So I get that. But the media has and the left have been so organized and determined to stop him. And the media, you know, I noticed this turn back with the election of Barack Obama. And I think I've probably talked about this on the program before. I certainly have back in some of my speeches. But people are shocked when I say, guess what network I was on the most, news network I was on the most prior to the election of Barack Obama. People say, well, Fox, of course. No, actually not. I was on MSNBC, followed by CNN, and actually I was rarely on Fox. And I wasn't all that crazy about being on Fox because I preferred CNN at the time because those were people that you could actually win over and convince. You know, I would go on MSNBC just to practice my sparring skills. But once Barack Obama was elected, MSNBC took a hard left, and CNN began moving in that direction pretty rapidly as well. And so they now don't even hide their bias. They are so anti-Trump in everything that he does. And I hope just, you know, I am more sympathetic toward the president, even on some of the things I disagree with, simply because the press gives him such a hard time. And I think there's a lot of folks out there that are like that, that are more sympathetic to the president, even on some things that they don't 100% agree with and stylistically they may not like, but simply because he is taking on and being taken on by the press at every turn. So, TJ, I think you're absolutely right. All right, we're going to try to work in another call here. Let's go to California where, is it Brenna? Brenna?
Yes, Brenna. Uh-huh.
Brenna, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. I appreciate so much all you do. I can't tell you, I thank God for you all the time.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I would give him an A+. I am sitting here in the middle of the most liberal part of the country, and truly, I've decided I'm going to be bold, and I'm going to stand up when people start making fun of him. And I was just at a house concert last night where they were doing that, and my friend and I went up to talk to the musicians afterward and said that we felt like they exploited the stage for in between the songs, and they were not at all open to that. But I've just kind of taken it for so long, all throughout this whole election process. I would just give him an A+. The resistance against Donald Trump has been so unbelievable that if it were the reverse, if it were a Democratic candidate and there were this kind of resistance against the Democratic candidate, oh my goodness, would we have heard?
Oh yeah, without question. Without question. Well, Brenna, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate the kind comments. We're coming up against the end of the program, and I want to thank you for calling and listening. And I want to thank you for standing up. I applaud you. And look, I go to California at least 3 or 4 times a year. I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, I often wonder, you know, why people live out there until I get out there and enjoy the weather. But the politics, crazy. But thank you for standing up. If enough of us will stand up and say, and I'm not talking about standing up the way the left does. I'm not talking about being vicious and hateful and all the stuff that they do, okay? I'm just saying stand up for the truth and not be afraid to say what we believe and why we believe it. And do so respectfully. Speak, as I say often, out of a redemptive heart. Speak truth so that people might come to know the truth. Brenna, thank you. Thank you for calling and for standing up. Well, folks, that's a great segue to the end of the program because you know what the Apostle Paul said. If you've been listening, you know what he says. Ephesians chapter 6, he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.